With the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Filling in for Danielle Leal, here's today's host, Brian German.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Farm City Newsday from AgNet West. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm your host, Brian German. And today's show will feature an in-depth conversation about emission levels in the beef and dairy sectors, as well as a report on some free services that are available to citrus growers. But first, a recent action from Governor Newsom has given ag groups a reason to celebrate in today's top story. Governor Gavin Newsom's veto of AB 616 has received several messages of appreciation from multiple agricultural groups. AB 616 would have eliminated the secret ballot process for voting on issues of union representation. In his veto message, Governor Newsom stated that, quote, "This bill contains various inconsistencies and procedural issues related to the collection and review of ballot cards." The California Farm Bureau Federation had worked to organize the farming community in opposition to AB 616, recently holding a rally on the steps of the Capitol to encourage a veto of the bill. CFBF President Jamie Johansson said that Governor Newsom's action has protected the sanctity of the secret ballot election. Several concerns had been raised as AB 616 was making its way through the legislative process. A year-long mail-in card check system would have created significant potential for coercion and intimidation during union voting procedures. Groups such as the California Fresh Fruit Association and Western Growers also expressed support for the veto, noting that they stand ready to work with the Labor and Workforce Development Agency and the Agricultural Labor Relations Board to continue helping to protect the rights of California farm workers. And in other good news for growers, canine-assisted ACP scouting services are being made available for free to industry members. CEO of Canine Detection Services, Lisa Finke, described where and how they're able to provide scouting services to growers.
Well, right now, USDA has given me permission to provide services in Texas and California, so we can go anywhere in those states that we're invited. Thanks to the taxpayers' federal dollar, USDA APHIS has funded us for a year. And so until April 1st, 2022, any grower or government agency can request our services and they don't have to pay a thing.
Requests for services, which have been shown to be quite effective, can be made at canine-detection.com.
On average, they're 95% accurate across all the different environments that we tested them at, with thresholds of ACP from 1 to 25.
In other news, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is looking for insight on what cell-cultured meat should be called. USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service has put out an advance notice of proposed rulemaking and is seeking comments on how products that are derived from animal cells should be labeled. The feedback provided as part of the rulemaking process will be incorporated into future regulatory requirements for cell-cultured products. The deadline to submit comments at regulations.gov is Tuesday, November 2nd. A total of 14 questions are posed in the request for comment, such as should labels clearly state when a product was derived using animal cell culture technology, and what types of terms would be most appropriate for labeling. FSIS entered into an agreement with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration back in 2019, outlining joint powers for regulating the production of products developed from cultured cells for human consumption. The concept of cell-cultured meat products has been an important subject, particularly for the meat and poultry industry. FSIS noted that thousands of comments on the issue were submitted in response to a 2018 public meeting regarding two petitions for rulemaking for cell-cultured products. And now here's Randall Wiseman with another agriculture report.
Well, ag disasters funding included in a House stopgap funding bill could face Senate GOP filibuster. House Democrats included billions of dollars for ag disaster in their stopgap government funding bill that passed on a party-line vote, but that now faces a Senate GOP filibuster over its debt limit hike. Here's Ag Appropriations Chair Sanford Bishop.
The legislation includes $10 billion for agricultural disaster assistance programs to cover events in 2020 and 2021. Farmers, ranchers, and producers continue to face extreme climate events, from extensive drought out west and unprecedented heat in the Pacific Northwest to another year of massive wildfires in California.
Ag Republicans tried unsuccessfully in committee to include more WIP Plus funding in the bill, but Democrats insisted instead on adding it plus other aid to sweeten the stopgap bill. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Randall. And in more agriculture news, the Department of Pesticide Regulation has opened the application period for the 2022 Alliance and Research Grants. DPR is offering a little over $5.5 million in potential funding to accelerate the transition to safer and more sustainable pest management. In the last 20 years, DPR has invested more than $13 million to fund 71 projects within the Research and Alliance grant programs. Project eligibility for the Research Grants Program includes those that develop pest management tools and practices to reduce the use of high-risk pesticides or decrease the impacts of pest management materials on public health and the environment. Project budgets will range from $50,000 to $3.75 million. Virtual information sessions going over the grant program will be held on October 14th and November 10th. Program applications will need to be submitted by 5 p.m. on Friday, December 10th. The Alliance Grants Program will accept projects that promote or increase the implementation, expansion, and adoption of effective and proven IPM systems or practices. Budgets for eligible projects will range between $50,000 and $1.8 million. Virtual information sessions about the program are scheduled for December 10th and February 3rd of next year. Alliance grant applications will be accepted until 5 p.m. on Thursday, March 10th, 2022. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Brian German. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports, including our livestock report with Randall Wiseman when we return.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Are you doing anything to wake it up? Phycoterra Soil Microbe Food activates the native microbes that are responsible for your soil's health and crop productivity. Adding Phycoterra to your cropping system increases soil microbial activity by up to 33 times and is proven to increase crop yield and ROI. Plus, its excellent mixability and application flexibility allow you to add it to your existing crop input strategy with a free ride to the field. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Wild Eye hopes all their many customers out there are having or had a successful harvest. The folks from Wild Eye are diligently working on their 4G swap and upgrade campaign to keep your systems working. Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headlines, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. The Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service will hold its biannual data users meeting virtually next month. The Data Users Meeting is held to share recent and pending statistical program changes with the public and to solicit input on the programs. The event is organized by NAS in cooperation with the World Agricultural Outlook Board, Farm Service Agency, Economic Research Service, Agricultural Marketing Service, Foreign Agricultural Service, and U.S. Census Bureau. Agricultural Statistics Board Chair Joe Parsons states, quote, "This is an excellent opportunity for data users to be informed and involved in guiding the agricultural information USDA produces both now and into the future," unquote. The October 13 agenda includes agency updates followed by breakout sessions for participants to choose from one or more in-depth topics. On October 14, the floor will open to participants for questions and comments, and the event will close with additional breakout sessions. You can register online. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday from AgNet West. I'm your host, Brian German. Now we'll hear today's livestock report from Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, last week, Senate Agriculture Committee's Dairy Subcommittee held a hearing. It was actually called by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, who is chair of that committee. The hearing focused on issues related to milk pricing and the federal milk marketing order system, which has shown strains during the COVID-19 pandemic, due in large part to flaws of the current Class 1 mover and its ripple effects through dairy revenues. National Milk Producers Federation Senior Vice President of Membership Services and Strategic Initiatives, Chris Galen, discusses dairy farmer losses during the pandemic that was actually caused by the Class 1 mover formula change in the 2018 Farm Bill.
The Senate's Dairy Subcommittee, which is part of the overall Senate Ag Committee, held a hearing asking dairy farmers and others in the industry, well, what needs to change regarding our pricing system? And, of course, depending on who you ask, you get a variety of different answers. But I think the consensus is that particularly in the last year, the way that we price Class 1 milk has some deficits that need to be addressed. So that is something that the Senate and perhaps the House and certainly USDA are well aware of. And this hearing helped reinforce the idea that the system that we had prior to the last Farm Bill didn't result in some of the disparities that we saw last year, where we had a significant reduction in Class 1 revenue. Now, the good news is that USDA recognized the shortfalls, and that's why they are going to be rolling out a $350 million direct payment program to farmers here this fall and this winter, those most affected by the Class 1 downfall. There's some problems with that because of the payment limits they have, Bill, but at least there's some recognition and some money being applied to that situation. The longer-term issue is that we need to re-examine the formula for pricing the entire classified price system, but particularly Class 1, so that we can hopefully move beyond the types of disruptions that we saw last year. Now, granted, last year was really exceptional in a lot of ways, many of which were unfortunate. And the Class 1 milk pricing system is just one more evidence that as we move past the pandemic and its impacts, hopefully we could see a smoother sailing ahead.
Again, that was NMPF's Chris Galen. They note that Congress must do additional work to ensure dairy farmers are fairly compensated for losses rooted in a change to the pricing formula for Class 1 milk. NMPF says the 2018 Farm Bill did change the Class 1 mover that determines the price of fluid milk under the Federal Milk Marketing Order System at the urging of dairy processors who sought greater price predictability. The change contributed to substantial market volatility last year and has led to an estimated $750 million in losses for farmers compared to the previous Class 1 formula. Without a fix, they note that dairy farmers will permanently bear unfair and unnecessary price risk compared to processors during times of unusual market volatility. You can learn more about this on the National Milk Producers Federation website, nmpf.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Thanks, Randall. And in more agriculture news, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is making significant investments in renewable energy infrastructure to help rural communities. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack recently announced that USDA is investing a total of $464 million to enhance renewable energy infrastructure in 48 states to help ag producers and businesses lower their energy costs. $129 million of the investments will be financed through the Rural Energy for America program, which helps ag producers and rural small businesses purchase and install renewable energy systems and make energy efficiency improvements. The investments are expected to conserve and generate enough electricity to power more than 35,000 homes. A total of $335 million in investments will be financed through the Electric Loan Program, which will help in the development or improvement of more than 1,400 miles of line to strengthen reliability in rural areas. And in other news, coming up on Thursday, September 30th, an online presentation has been scheduled going over the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act and how it will impact the San Joaquin Valley. Hosted by the Public Policy Institute of California, the online event will cover the work that needs to be done by farmers and urban water utilities to address groundwater overdraft while building climate resilience. More information is available at ppic.org. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Brian German. We'll be back in just a moment with more agriculture news and farm features when we return.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Are you doing anything to wake it up? Phycoterra Soil Microbe Food activates the native microbes that are responsible for your soil's health and crop productivity. Adding Phycoterra to your cropping system increases soil microbial activity by up to 33 times and is proven to increase crop yield and ROI. Plus, its excellent mixability and application flexibility allow you to add it to your existing crop input strategy with a free ride to the field. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Wild Eye hopes all their many customers out there are having or had a successful harvest. The folks from Wild Eye are diligently working on their 4G swap and upgrade campaign to keep your systems working. Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Brian German. For today's interview segment, we have a discussion about the beef and dairy sectors and how they can work towards becoming more environmentally friendly. Professor and air quality specialist and director of the CLEAR Center at UC Davis, Frank Mittlerner, joins us again today to talk a little bit about livestock and emissions. Now, a new white paper was published recently detailing how beef and dairy production could reach climate neutrality in the next 30 years, which is a really interesting topic and something we've talked about a bit before. But before getting into some of the details of the paper and how that might be achieved, I thought it would be good to sort of break down a part of this paper where you differentiate some of the language there. For example, carbon neutral versus climate neutral versus net zero. So what sets these things apart? They all sound pretty similar. And so what are some of the differences there and which would be the most appropriate to apply when talking about dairy and beef production?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, in general, all sectors of society need to get to a point where they don't add additional warming to our planet. Okay, the fossil fuel related sectors such as transportation, so that's cars, trucks, trains, planes, ships, as well as power production and use and so on, they all have one thing in common, and that is that they use oil, coal, and gas that was stored in the ground for a long, long time. And then that fossil fuel is burned. And when it's burned, then it releases carbon, in particular CO2, carbon dioxide. And that CO2 stays in the air for 1,000 years. Now, beef and dairy and other livestock are very different. Their main greenhouse gas is not CO2, carbon dioxide, but their main greenhouse gas is methane. And that's where it becomes interesting, because methane is a potent greenhouse gas. And that's really true, but it's also a very short-lived greenhouse gas. I call it the fast and furious. So it only has a lifespan of about one decade. And during that one decade, it's very potent, but then it's gone, then it's destroyed. And because of that, the beef and dairy sector, they don't have to go to net zero. They don't have to reduce all greenhouse gases down to zero. What they have to do is they have to reduce their methane. And that methane is so important, because when they reduce the methane, then that will counteract some of the other greenhouse gases they produce. And so for beef and dairy, what is the goal is really to reach the point by which they don't affect the climate in a negative way. And that is the point of climate neutrality. So to sum this up, the fossil fuel sector needs to reach carbon neutrality to become climate neutral. But for beef and dairy, what's needed is that we reduce methane in a meaningful way, anywhere between 20 to 40%. And at that point, we'll become climate neutral.
And that's something I definitely wanted to drill down on, just because it's important to get the phrasing correct when we're talking about these types of climate issues. Because like you said, not all emissions are created equal there. So As part of this paper, it sort of details how the industry might be able to get there by 2050 by making some improvements along the way. I mean, it's not a light switch that the industry can just kind of turn on and get there. It's going to take some systematic improvements over time, and it's going to require some incremental improvements to get to that goal of 2050.
Well, indeed, we have a story to tell here in California that's unique, because we have a very ambitious goal set by the California legislature, and that is to reduce methane by 40%, 40, and that reduction has to occur within the next 10 years, and that's law. At first, our farmers thought that's not achievable, but the state actually had a surprise, and that surprise was that the state will not use the cane approach of rules and regulations and fines to get those farmers to reduce methane, but instead they used the carrot approach of financially incentivizing these reductions. And as a result, the dairy industry has made very meaningful investments, particularly in and around manure management. The most important one is the construction of so-called covered lagoons. That's a cover over the animal manure storage areas. They're called lagoons. When you cover them, then the gases that normally would go into the air are now trapped. And that gas mixture is called biogas. Over half of that is methane. That biogas is trapped and then converted into a fuel type for vehicles. And this fuel type is called renewable natural gas. And this conversion of dairy biogas to fuel is considered the most carbon negative fuel type there is. And that's a good thing. It sounds negative, but it's not. It's a good thing because you pull carbon out of the air. And that is strongly financially incentivized by the state of California. Now, sum this up. If you are a dairyman and you capture the biogas by using a covered lagoon and you convert that into fuel for vehicles such as semi-trucks, then you receive credits called the low carbon fuel standard credits, and they are very significant. So there's a financial incentive for dairymen to do this. And many have already done it, leading to a situation where in California, the dairy industry has already reduced its methane by 25%. So we are over halfway at achieving the 40% reduction goal, which is simply said phenomenal.
Absolutely. A lot has already been done, and it seems like there's a pretty clear course of action that can be put in place to make even further improvements on emission levels. And for those that might want to get a little deeper in the white paper and learn more about how beef and dairy sectors can become climate neutral, where can people find this paper?
So it's part of our center activity, and so you find it on the web at CLEAR, C-L-E-A-R, CLEAR. .ucdavis.edu. And there you find the paper straight on the incoming page.
Very good. Again, Frank Mitlerner, professor and air quality specialist and director of the CLEAR Center at UC Davis, providing us with some of the information presented in a recent white paper. Frank, thanks again for taking the time with us here this morning.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Brian German. We'll be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Are you doing anything to wake it up? Phycoterra Soil Microbe Food activates the native microbes that are responsible for your soil's health and crop productivity. Adding Phycoterra to your cropping system increases soil microbial activity by up to 33 times and is proven to increase crop yield and ROI. Plus, its excellent mixability and application flexibility allow you to add it to your existing crop input strategy with a free ride to the field. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Wild Eye hopes all their many customers out there are having or had a successful harvest. The folks from Wild Eye are diligently working on their 4G swap and upgrade campaign to keep your systems working. Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headlines, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. House Appropriations Committee Chair Rosa DeLauro introduced the Fresh Produce Procurement Reform Act. The Connecticut Democrat says the legislation will increase and improve the Department of Agriculture's procurement of fresh fruits and vegetables. The bill would require USDA to partner with growers, distributors, and food hubs to provide fresh, U.S.-grown fruits and vegetables to community organizations like schools, food pantries, and youth organizations while prioritizing socially disadvantaged farmers and entities and regional food inequities. The United Fresh Produce Association welcomed the legislation. United Fresh President and CEO Tom Stenzel states, quote, "This is a monumental step in the right direction in addressing nutrition insecurity and access for 9 out of 10 Americans who struggle to meet dietary guidelines, fruit and vegetable recommendations," unquote. Late last year, United Fresh convened a working group to embark on a months-long project of providing recommendations on how to reform purchasing practices to be more inclusive of fresh produce. The Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service calls the discovery of African swine fever in Haiti unfortunate, but not unexpected. Last Monday, a case of ASF was reported to the World Organization for Animal Health after confirmed by USDA's Plum Island, New York facility. The sample was collected from a pig in a province bordering the Dominican Republic, where ASF was discovered this summer. In a statement, APHIS said it has numerous interlocking safeguards in place to prevent ASF from entering the United States. Pork and pork products from Haiti and the Dominican Republic are prohibited entry to the United States because of existing classical swine fever restrictions. After ASF was detected in the Dominican Republic, APHIS increased surveillance and safeguards in U.S. territories. APHIS continues to work with partners including the U.S. Customs and Border Protection and the U.S. swine industry to prevent ASF from entering the United States. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Brian German. And now for more national news, here's USDA's Rod Bain with a report.
A record ag export year is expected in 2021. Part of that includes all-time record ag goods sales to China. And Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack believes even as the Phase 1 trade agreement between both nations is set to expire at year's end, U.S. ag exports to China will remain strong.
They need the food that we can supply. So I think there is an economic and food imperative on their part, and I think it makes good sense for us to be able to maintain some degree of connection with China.
Also from a recent Farm Journal interview, the secretary says diversification of ag trade remains essential, particularly when it comes to the complex relationship between the U.S. and China.
It makes more sense to do this in the context of us figuring out ways in which we can expand market opportunities in Southeast Asia so that we're not overly reliant on a single market. That's why we've been engaged with conversations with Vietnam to reduce barriers and why we're engaged with other Southeast Asian countries on reducing tariff barriers and SPS barriers that make it easier or more difficult for us to trade.
And long-term, Secretary Vilsack sees Africa as a great opportunity to build new and expand existing U.S. ag export markets.
That's why the discussions that the trade representative is currently having with Kenya are important, because that could be the opening to opportunities in Africa over a long period of time.
Not to mention building upon trade opportunities closer to home, such as through the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Now, some have speculated that our nation may attempt to re-enter what was previously known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The secretary believes that some things at home and abroad must occur first. He acknowledges Congress must get behind this or any future trade agreement. Perhaps a challenge, as members of both sides of the aisle have concerns about trade in general. So to help lessen those concerns,
first and foremost, we have to build a strong foundation domestically where people feel more confident in our own economy. at that point, once we feel stronger, then at that point, and I think it makes it a little bit easier to get the votes you need to get a trade agreement through the process.
In addition, creative ways are needed to reduce trade barriers with other nations.
And prepare ourselves to be in a position, when the time is right, to negotiate potentially either bilaterally or multilaterally.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at AgNet West, and our team of Brian German at Brian German AgNet West and Danielle Leal with at D Leal AgNet West. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.